We have Sebastian Bourdais, Craig Hampson, Olivier Boisson, all the mechanics, Dale Coyne, his wife. I don't know. I think the dog might have even helped with making that kind of a crazy start to the season. What comes to mind, I guess, as the big themes coming out of St. Petersburg, there might be some obvious ones, but what do you think we're going to be talking about years from now about, boy, St. Pete 2017?
Christ, I doubt if I remember by next year, but just because I'm old, but I think that Honda's kind of a renaissance for them, you know, 8 out of the top 10 in qualifying and winning the race. And, you know, I think kind of what kind of got lost in the shuffle is before Ganassi came to Honda, I think Art and T. McHale, Art Sincere and T. McHale, one of their big victories was getting Sebastian Bourdais hooked up with Coyne. And, you know, had they not been able to get Chip Ganassi, they were counting heavily on Bourdais and his feedback, and Craig, who's obviously certainly one of the best engineers in the paddock, one of the two or three best probably. So you know more about this than I would, but I there were some questions in the mailbag. Why have they caught up? I said, well, I don't know if they've caught up. It looks like they have. I'm not sure one race we can make any real determinations yet, but they certainly look like they have. And so everybody says, is it because Ganassi's that much better with engineering than Andretti was when they were lost? And I said, I don't know that you can just necessarily count Sebastian Bourdais out of the equation either, because I think between him and Dixon and Kanaan, maybe their feedback has already worked some wonders.
Yeah, it's not as if the Ganassi guys are handing Craig Hampson, Sebastian Bourdais, and Dale Coyne their setups. So to your point, you know, having Ganassi there is important, really important. Scott Dixon put in an amazing drive, which we almost don't even need to say that anymore. How often can we say Dixon didn't do something spectacular? That would be rare, but Dixon was amazing. TK started off very strong, more motivated than anyone can imagine. Charlie Kimball was quick. Max Chilton was quick. All four Ganassi cars were fast. Obviously, with the, whatever that was, lap 33 or so, debris yellow, that threw things wide open. The Coyne team with Bourdais, they were obviously suffering from starting dead last. Sebastian had a brake issue in qualifying. Started last, didn't get to set a time. And he was stuck in the pack, mired behind, I think, Marco Andretti for quite a bit. During the leading up to what would have been the first pit stop, and stuck back there. The team said, hey, let's, instead of just being miserable and not going very far to work our way up the grid, let's pit early and try and do things a little bit differently. That ended up playing to their favor when the yellow came out, but nonetheless, Bourdais was quick, lots of people were quick, the Andretti team was quick. Right, you look at the results, you've got Honoré 4th, Sato 5th, Marco 7th. You and I spoke to Rossi after the race. He's the first driver who, when I said to him, hey man, you know, it was really impressive watching your drive out there, and his response was, whatever. I'm like, okay, dude, I won't bother saying positive things to you in the future if that's what it's going to be like. But regardless, all four Andretti cars were quick. All four Ganassi cars were quick. Graham Rahal, I think he might have been in the worst place of all the Honda teams when it comes to brakes and brake temperatures. He was just miserable throughout the event. So we didn't get to see a whole lot from them, but up and down throughout the Honda camp, they're all quick. And you can point to Honda finding some serious horsepower in the offseason that we did not expect, right? We spoke about that, how the way IndyCar does their homologation, it's 1 year on, 1 year off. So 2016 was a year where Chevy and Honda could do a whole bunch of things to make their engines better. This year, not so much, but regardless, Honda found quite a bit. And I think they also did learn how to get more out of their aero kit, which was then filtered down to its teams. The teams also learned more. So that's one thing. The other thing, which I wrote about in my Rewind column, was there's also a math thing to consider, Robin. And I would love to pretend that I was the really smart person who thought of this. I should have, but didn't. I had an engineer friend who stopped me on Friday and said, hey, I don't think it's going to be as bad for the Hondas as you think. And I said, really? And I said, now keep in mind, I'm not just making this stuff on my own. This is talking to, you know, every Honda team and, you know, even Honda themselves. And they didn't go into the season thinking that they were going to kick butt and win the first race. But regardless, he said, think about the numbers. The numbers are not in Chevy's favor. So it's that part's maybe a little bit obvious. Duh, I think a lot of people figured that out. Hey, there are 13 full-time Hondas. There's only 8 full-time Chevys. But he wasn't just talking about the 8 versus 13. He was referring to, you know, losing Ganassi, that's a really big deal when it comes to Chevy and also Penske. Because now, Chevy no longer has a 1-2 punch everywhere they go. I mean, it could be Ganassi winning and Penske second, Penske winning Ganassi second, but past couple years, we've seen those two teams just always up front, always representing the bow tie and delivering lots of points and wins. Well, you subtract Ganassi, and then you don't necessarily have the teams right behind Ganassi to help, right? Ed Carpenter Racing isn't the same Ed Carpenter Racing without Joseph Newgarden. It's not saying anything negative against our boy Hildebrand, but no one expects JR to be an exact replica of Newgarden on the road and street courses, at least not starting out.
Now, hell, Piggott carried their flag. You wouldn't have known it by watching the ABC telecast, but he probably passed more. He made more quality passes than anybody in the race, and the only time they talked about it is when the rotor blew up.
Well,
but he had a hell of a race.
Yeah,
drove
and
all the way up to drove from 13th up to 4th or 5th or 6th or something like that, and made 3 really great passes in 3 laps. So, yeah, I just think that it's
it exposes Penske. That's the thing, Robin, is, and without KV there and Bourdais driving for KV, you look at the depth of the Chevy teams on the road and street courses. Again, we know Ed Carpenter Racing's, they are going to be a beast on the ovals, and we know that AJ Foyt Racing is going to have some good events, but we're not really expecting a lot from them during a season where they've just overhauled everything. So really, again, it kind of comes down to Penske as the one to have to hold off a bunch of faster, angrier, more competitive Hondas. And when we have a St. Pete scenario where Pagano has a bad qualifying, Elio was never really on the pace, Joseph had some things go wrong in the race, Will had some things go wrong, really what you're talking about now is if things go a little bit sideways for Penske, the door is really open for a Honda to win. And it's just simply because there are no other really strong Chevys waiting to fill in when Penske has a bad day. So, you know, Chevy's going to win the championship. Penske should win the championship. I don't think we've changed our predictions at all after one race, but I think we've seen how Honda can really start to add more wins than we might have predicted going into the year.
Well, a guy wrote a pretty good, I'm not sure I phrased it, but he said, hey, Miller, you know, if Honda's caught up here, is Bourdais suddenly a title contender? When you think about 11 to 17 races being street circuits and road courses, you're suddenly thinking, hell yes, with him and Craig, I mean, they legitimately could be a title contender.
So looking at the results, we had another cool thing. We had Seb starting dead last, 21st to 1st in wins. We have Pagano, who started 14th and motored to 2nd. As you and I said on Saturday, it was a bad day for France in qualifying, and then come Sunday, and it's a France 1-2. Not too bad for our boys there. Dixon, I think, could have won easily if not for poor timing of that yellow. He finishes 3rd. Honoré, Sato right behind. Marco and Brian Herta, that's something that we wrote about a little bit. It was really cool to see Marco trying to be more positive, still falling into his old habits, and Brian Herta being right there like, nope, we're not going down that path, man. We're going to look at the things we did right and keep our heads up. And just sitting there and watching that dynamic play out, it wasn't like I asked them to act it out. I just happened to walk up as the two of them were coming together, and I think that's going to pay dividends. I know most readers are going to groan, first of all, and say you guys are jackasses, but we're not predicting Marco is going to win a championship, is going to all of a sudden have just the best results of all time. But I think if you look at Brian Herta's son, Colton, see the job that he's done with him, And just picture Brian treating Marco more like a son than a race car driver and trying to keep his spirits up, have him look at things in a more constructive, positive light. I think bringing that parental blueprint to Marco, which, as you and I heard in some private conversations over the weekend, which we can't repeat here, unfortunately, Marco has had his confidence crushed by multiple people over the years, and having someone who isn't trying to whip him and beat him down and destroy his confidence, I just have to believe he's going to react positively to that throughout the year.
Said in our preview, I think maybe other than Craig and Bordega back together, the second best move in the whole paddock was Brian Herta taking over Marco's races and being his, just kind of being his coach. And you saw it over the weekend. He was in the top three or four all practice, and they lost it in qualifying, and then he came, you know, finished seventh in the race. But I just think he'll, I think he'll win a race before the year's over, and I think he'll be competitive maybe everywhere. And I think it's all confidence. And even the crew guys, even Marco's crew guys are like, man, Herta has really, really helped his whole attitude, just the way he looks at things and the way he's on the radio and the way, that's what racing is. It's confidence. I mean, that's, you know, you think about Graham a couple years ago, three or four years ago, he was, you know, he'd lost his confidence and then he got it back. And now he's, you know, he thinks he's got a chance to win every race. And that's what racing is.
What are your thoughts about Newgarden's first event with Team Penske? Obviously, you know, big thing, big occasion for him. Also, although he wouldn't know the difference, there was a change in timing stands with Tim Cindric moving over from Will Power, Myron Buslog moving over to take Tim's spot. But what do you think about Joseph's weekend? Was it as good as you expected? Did it go just about the way you thought?
But he qualified fourth?
Yeah.
I mean, he was qualified fourth. He was running in the top five, then got shuffled back. I mean, I just think, like he was saying after the race, you know, I mean, he said, you know, Brian, Pat, his engineer, they're trying to learn each other right off the fly. I'd say they made a pretty good first impression. And, you know, I think he's definitely going to win a couple races this year. I don't think there's any doubt about it. Because I had lunch with Derek Walker today, and we were talking about
why do you do that to yourself? I mean, that's just a really bad decision of how to use one's time.
Derek Walker, somebody, he pays me to have lunch with him a week.
Good man.
But, he told us last year, well, it takes about a year to get used to the Penske system, and that's why Pagano kind of struggled the first year. I don't think it's going to take Newgarden even close. I think he's going to be right. I think he's already right there. Now, you know, again, it's one race, but I think he's going to be somebody that's going to contend for the championship, and I always did.
Let's talk about a few others who stood out. James Hinchcliffe didn't have the result that might have impressed folks, but you wrote a good piece after the race. Man, his pass into Turn 1 to take the lead, we haven't seen that from a Schmidt car in a couple years, that real decisive go-get-it, throw it down the inside and come out in P1. Hinch and the team really looked like what they were looking for in the offseason, showed up at St. Pete. I know we loved watching him do that. What did you think about that team's rise?
Well, yeah, he was in practice on Sunday. He was taking all these crazy lines going into one. So I waited until he talked to all his guys after the race. And he was like, man, we didn't have the car to win the race. You know, I said, you know, too bad about the break, because you're leading the race and then you're suddenly in the back. And he goes, yeah, it happens. I mean, he was, you know, very, well, he was like, look, I don't think we had the car to win. And I said something about passing Power for the lead. And he said, yeah, I said, I saw you try all these weird lines. And yeah, I was just trying to see if there was any grip out there anywhere. And I was just trying to figure out if that's where a place that I can maybe make a pass. And he did. But, you know, I think he, you know, he almost, well, he lost Texas by a foot to Graham last year, and he was in the Mad Russian, almost won Mid Ohio and damn near won Pocono. So, I mean, I think there'll be, you know, I think again, if Honda's got if Honda's renaissance is 100% like we think it might be, then they'll be right there with everybody else.
Speaking of a lotion, I have to admit, Robin, I'm looking through the 21 drivers who participated at St. Pete, and he's the only one that from start to finish, from opening practice to the end of the race, never really knew he was there. That surprised me. I imagine it surprised you too, because we both expected McHale to come into the season cool, consistency, same team 2 years in a row, building on stuff, etc. Hinch was quick, poor qualifying, didn't do much in the race. Strange.
I talked to him right after the race, and I said, hey, he goes, I said, what did you need? He said, brakes. So I think he had brake issues all weekend, it sounded like. So, well, you know, he's pretty unflappable. He's like, yeah. He goes, we'll be all right. I mean, he just, one race, he said, no, we just never got, he goes, I could not put a good lap together.
What about our boy Ed Jones? I mean, frankly, you look at the past two Indy Lights Championship winners, and Spencer Pigot and Ed, smart, strong, aggressive, really made no mistakes. Ed obviously making his IndyCar debut, Spencer coming back for his second season with Ed Carpenter, but I thought the two of them represented the Mazda road to Indy with excellence, but I really was impressed by Ed. You know, he would have been excused if he'd thrown the thing to the wall or done something dumb just because of his inexperience. Didn't happen. If anything, his result was thoroughly diminished because of a mistake on pit lane that wasn't his.
Well, it's like you wrote in your rewind for tomorrow, tomorrow, he was going to be fifth or sixth. I mean, he drove a hell of a race, and he made a couple really good passes. So it's interesting because he had a good test at Phoenix, and, you know, we kidded him after Phoenix, you know, well, that sprint car experience is paying off, and he's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to do it again. But, I mean, yeah, that kid's a good little racer, and it's like looking at, you know, people say, well, there's only 21 cars and we need 28. Well, it'd be nice to have 28 like the old days, but there's 21 guys and they're all pretty damn good, and the teams are pretty good. So I guess that's what we probably ought to, if you're really looking at it, I mean, you look at a Formula One race and you're talking about four guys that can win the race, maybe five. You look at an IndyCar race, you're talking about 12, maybe 13, 14. I mean, you can't tell me. Obviously, you couldn't pick the top three from last Sunday, but it's going to be hard. It's been hard for the last couple of years to pick who's going to win the race, unless it's Dixon at Mid-Ohio or Watkins Glen, which is kind of a, unless something happens, he's pretty tough to beat. But that's why I like, that's what's intriguing about it. You don't know who's going to win, and that's all you ever want. And you want good competition, and you want the depth of competition, and that's what IndyCar's got.
I don't know if you kissed him or did something funny, but Ed actually had mononucleosis at the Phoenix test and looked a little peaked. So his speed there was particularly impressive given the ailment he was dealing with. You know, the biggest announcement, the biggest thing to happen at St. Pete beyond Seb's crazy win might have gone a little bit underreported just because of the timing of, you know, practice sessions happening and everyone getting into the on-track product, but we had the announcement of contract extensions that will keep Chevy here for multiple years, Honda, Firestone, Dallara, all of the key players that make IndyCar what it is. They have all essentially aligned themselves to stick with IndyCar for X amount of years to come. And we're never, I shouldn't say never, but we don't expect to be in a place anytime soon to say IndyCar is overtaken NASCAR and it's the number one series in America and it's the most popular. Not there, not even close to being there. But it's little things like this where you go, interesting. That's a good kind of state of the union when the big companies are showing their interest and putting their money behind the series. When a contract is running out and they have a choice to say, you know, no vote of confidence here, I'm out. Or, signing up, committing who knows how many millions to stay and keep going. I think that is probably the most meaningful thing, at least, to come out of St. Pete. How about you?
It was good news. There just wasn't much to it as far as facts. Okay, how long is it for? Who rep for what? So we figured out that Honda had a three-year option that they could pick up at the end of this year. So they're through 2020. And Mark Kent said their contract was going to end at the end of this year, so we're guessing maybe they're through 2022. And Firestone and Dallara, so if everybody's good through 2020, that's, and nobody really wanted to talk about it, but I just think that that's, you know, it was kind of funny because I think Brant James of USA Today said, can you at least give us a hint on, you know, what the length of these things are, because that's the news value of it. So I think the fact that we never thought Honda was probably going to go away, although they're getting more and more involved in sports car racing, but I think what you look at is that, you know, Chevrolet gets so much, I mean, they've pretty much dominated the last couple of years, so it's easy maybe for their people to say, you know, we've got most, what we can out of this, let's move on, but thankfully they're going to stick around. Because I asked Mark Kent, I said, and I think I told you this sitting in the press room, is it, do you think there's not another engine manufacturer involved because they don't like the formula of today's IndyCar? And he goes, no, I don't think that's it at all. He goes, I think that's, it's a fairly popular formula. Because I said something to Derek today at lunch, and I said, why do you think, I said, should there be, could a different formula attract more participants? And he said, a production-based engine would probably do that. Is that logical?
It sounds great, and I've written the answer to that enough for the mailbag where I've actually just said, just copy and paste the answer to that. I mean, it sounds great, but the size of the engine is too much. An Indy car would look pregnant trying to fit most production-based engines in the back of what we have right now. And if we had to build something new to fit it, it would definitely be much bigger, look more like the old kind of whale-esque IRL Dallaras and G-forces. So that's one thing. The GT3 engine concept, it works in sports cars because in those instances, for the most part, it's all customer-based, meaning they race cars with production-based engines and they sell those cars as complete vehicles, or in some cases, they sell or lease the engines themselves to be used like in the back of a prototype or something like that. But those are for the most part customer-based things. It's really not something that a manufacturer gets in and spends a ton of money to do while using this production-based engine outside of the road car that it came out of. So again, it sounds wonderful, but for the most part, production-based engines are just big and heavy, and the one thing that makes an Indy car different than everything else and work as well as it does is the engines are small, lightweight, compact, and very powerful. When you go to a production-based engine, you can get power, but it just comes with a lot of weight and would, for the most part, destroy the aerodynamics. So
right. Well, and the other thing is, as long as you got Honda and Chevy beating on each other, and you can even the teams up, now you got Penske on one side and Ganassi on the other, you know, other than maybe adding more cars and adding more money to the series, that's the one thing that'd be nice about another engine manufacturer. But it's not like you can't roll along with what you've had, because the racing's been pretty damn good the last few years.
Well, let's close on something that kept you and I pretty much enthralled throughout the weekend, and that was the Mazda Road to Indy. I don't know if the Road to Indy ladder system has had a better start to its season than what we just had at St. Pete. All three steps, USF 2000, Pro Mazda, and Indy Lights there. The kid who won both Pro Mazda races swept the week in Anthony Martin. Kid from Australia, badass, reigning USF 2000 champion. Other than him, both kids that won the USF 2000 races, Americans. Both kids who won the Indy Lights races, Americans. Top to bottom, brother, whether it was the first step or the top step, a lot of energy, a lot of potential. We're looking at some kids who, they didn't just win. They won and demonstrated that they've got something special. And if I'm a IndyCar fan wanting not just more young talent, but young American talent, couple years down the pipeline, they're coming.
And there's two distinctly, I mean, Aaron Telles is, you tipped me off about him before the weekend started. I mean, he's 25 years old. He's almost an old man by some of today's standards, but his story about how he's come up through having, just keep winning scholarships, I mean, and he was damn impressive all weekend. And then, of course, Colton Hurd is 16 years old and 2 years in Europe, or 2 years in England all by himself with mom and dad not with him, you talk about mature and just growing up. So I think those two will be hammering away, and Santi Urich, I mean, he's going to be right there in the hunt probably, like he was last year. So it's going to, you know, when you think about all the young guys that are going for that $1 million, I think Indy Lights is going to be, I don't think it's going to be one of those things where people just go, ah, the Indy Lights race is on, maybe I'll watch it. I think a lot of people are going to pay attention this year.
And I like the fact that we've got some veterans come, you know, it's funny to say an Indy Lights veteran, but there, you know, there's a couple kids. Kyle Kaiser, he's back for his third season, I believe. Juan Piedrahita, he's back for his 29th year, whatever it is. I mean, there, Shelby Blackstock is back. There are some who are back for their second or third year, all who want to move up to IndyCar. And then you look at the two winners in Indy Lights last weekend, and they're both rooks. You know, I kind of like that too. Not as if we don't all want all the kids to move up and hopefully bring sponsors with them and just make everything rich and happy in the paddock, but you know, it's a little bit cutthroat, right? I mean, you were right in the middle of March Madness, and yeah, it'd be great if every kid on every team was drafted by an NBA team, but you know, hey, all right, in your fourth year here, and you might be a starter, but man, that kid coming off the bench is kicking your ass right about now. So it's not like Kaiser, it's not like Santi Arusha, it's not like some of these other kids aren't going to win Indy Lights races this year. But when you've got two rookies who show up and put the smackdown on a couple who were just frankly tipped to win the overall championship, I'd like that. It brings some heat that I don't know if they expected to have. We also had Pato O'Ward, who just got the call up last minute to come drive for Team Pelfrey. He had a fifth in his Indy Lights debut and then a third on Sunday. Just, again, for those of you who love IndyCar and know something about the Mazda Road to Indy or maybe trying to learn a little bit more about it, there's some real deep talent in all three steps this year. And not as if we haven't loved it and haven't followed it before, but I think there's just some real energy. Plus, we had in USF 2000 the brand new Tatus chassis, which was really quick. You had a mailbag question with someone saying, like, all right, wait a minute. We got three steps on the road to Indy, and the first step was faster than the second step. What the heck's going on? And, you know, Next year that same chassis is going to get used in Pro Mazda, so, you know, the Pro Mazdas should be back to being faster. But anyways, just some really good energy. You and I have left St. Petersburg before looking at each other like, it's going to be a long year. You know, that sucked. There wasn't much of a story to tell, or it looks like there's you know, one team or one manufacturer is going to wipe the floor with everybody else. We were really blessed, Robin, with the opposite of what we feared. We feared St. Pete was going to be nothing more than a continuation of Sonoma. Chevy kicking ass, Penske kicking ass, now buckle in and just wait till 2018 when hopefully things get better. Didn't happen at all. Total shock finish. Great story in Bordeaux and throughout the IndyCar order, throughout the Mazda Road to Indy, and even World Challenge with our boy Pat Long winning a race, Alvaro Parent winning as well. It was stellar, just a genuinely stellar weekend, and we don't have much time until Long Beach, so
well,
I gotta get some rest.
It won't come down in history as much of a race, but it was like typical street race. You know, I was in Long Beach, and I'm sure you were there too when Allinger Jr. and Mario lapped the field. It's a street race. You don't expect it to be like Texas or Pocono or Indy or Iowa. You just don't expect it, but it had a lot of storylines, and that's what made it interesting.
All right, friends. Well, I guess we call.
Have fun at Sebring.
Well, I'm here. I'm trying, but we call it the news, the week in IndyCar news. I don't know if we gave you a lot of news, gave you a lot of opinions, kind of talked about the race just happened. So, you know, this is a constantly evolving format. I don't know if we're ever going to find one and stick with it, but we appreciate you listening. Share it with your friends if you think they have bad taste like you and want to hear Pruitt and Miller ramble on about whatever. And we'll be back next week with, I don't know what, actually, I'm lying. There's some news coming down the pipeline that Robin knows about as well. And it should make for a fun discussion on next week's edition of The Week in IndyCar News.